The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, what is going on, people? Welcome to Throw Down Your Questions, episode 581. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
I want to know what happened to those plans.
Carlos Romero.
Yo.
Richard Bailey Jr.
What's up, everybody?
And Brian Manjoma.
What up?
All right, guys, we have a returned. We shall see if anybody else shows up, but for now, you got the five of us. Just the five of us.
Fantastic Five,
yo. The Fantastic Five. Go for five. Da, 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 da. The Fantastic Five. Oh, man. I see who remembers that song. Oh, I changed it a little bit, obviously.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I know hesitation. Let's get into it, man. We got questions. All right. Starting us off here, Jolly Yellow Nerd. With the recent changes to Game Pass, could this mean Sharma is actually there to try to save Xbox rather than prepare for a shutdown? And Mob Hits had the same question. You know, because remember, one of the... Actually, I forgot who said it, but somebody came out and was like, oh, yeah, she's there to sunset the company. But, you know, with all these changes,
What's that? Was a Chris thing.
No. Some big... I mean, Chris said it too. But, hey, what's up, Chris, by the way? Hi.
yo.
But yeah, so Chris, the first question, literally you just showed up like a second after I asked the first question. It was just with the recent changes to Game Pass, could this mean Sharma is actually there to save Xbox rather than prepare for a shutdown? Basically, there was some big name guy that said like this exact thing, that she was there to sunset it. But with these changes, maybe not, you know? What do you think?
I think it was the guy, the original engine, OG Xbox.
Seamus, right? I think Seamus Blackley. Yeah, yes.
And I had echoed that. I didn't know he said it until we read the article on the show, but I'm saying this. And I don't know, her actions are not someone that wants to do that. So I'm going to have to retract that statement. Because so far, I'm not saying that. And who knows? Like, I don't have the answers. Xbox is in a hole. Mm-hmm. It is in a very big hole. So that is a monumental task to pull it out of there. I would think that her actions would be someone who embraced Microsoft Gaming, start doing more cloud stuff, start... Project Helix would not be a thing. I don't think they would do another console. I think to Azure, say, oh, you'll just give them the cloud and continue the whole, this is an Xbox, that's an Xbox, your toaster's an Xbox. All that stuff. So... The fact with trying to lower Game Pass price, trying to ingratiate people back in Game Pass, restoring the Xbox branding, getting rid of Microsoft Gaming, and the Project Helix announcement, and all that, I have to rethink what I said. Yeah. I think Seamus owes her an apology.
Oh, damn. Yeah. Obviously, we'll have to see what happens, but just going off the top of my head, lowers the price of Game Pass, gets rid of the whole, you know, this is an Xbox initiative. Says, no, we're not Microsoft Gaming. We are Xbox. And is even hinting at exclusives. So very interesting stuff. So, yeah, that doesn't sound to me like someone was there to sunset the brand, you know? So there sounds like someone who's trying to revive the brand. Obviously, we'll have to wait and see. It's very early to tell. We don't want to give a report card on her or whatever, or dub her an empress like some of these loons on Twitter have been doing all fucking weekend. Have you seen some of this shit, bro?
Crazy talk. Yeah, this is crazy.
Yeah. Her Jesus. I'm like, there's a few things wrong with that aside from a sacrilegious bit, but you know, we're not going to get into that. But yeah, what about the rest of you guys? Do you think, Sharma is there to save Xbox?
I think, like you said, it's still too early to give a report card. You know, we can only give progress reports right now. And the fact that they changed from Microsoft Gaming to Xbox is a big indicator that at least, you know, for the time being, they're not trying to sunset anything right now. So it's it's a pretty good indicator, and it's something that I see as something that's really positive. And you know, good for them. They need to take a control of that brand. They just lost their way.
Shit.
You know, the last couple of years. It just seems like what did Micro or what did Xbox stood for? It's like that shit changed every other month.
Yeah.
You know, under the Phil regime. So hopefully, you know, with Sharma, hopefully the messaging is at least more concrete and consistent, and you know, they take it to a direction where hopefully it lead to prosperity for them. But yeah, so far like we can't give a report card, but so far it's up in a pretty decent start.
Yeah. Rich, what are your thoughts, bro?
Yeah, so I will say this. It's a bit too early, like Carlos said, to give her an A or an A+ for everything that she has done up to this point. I will say, yes, I still have to be convinced about, because again, there are certain metrics that have to be met. Obviously, we know that Gears of War E-Day is coming out later this year. I want to see whether or not that's also coming to PlayStation, because that is not confirmed yet. And that is something that I do still think it will come to PlayStation. You know, they released Gears, the Gears Collection, the Gears 1 Reloaded. So we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, we need to see whether or not they actually stick to this thing, if they actually do go exclusive, and how things go. But so far, yes, so far so good. So we give them props on that. But as a wise man on this podcast, Manny has once said, we are still in the honeymoon phase, ladies and gentlemen. So we need to wait and see where things go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still think it's very early. Like a lot of, you know, the sentiment everybody's been saying, I feel like it is still very early to give her the win on this, because a lot of this is just really easy, like easy forward facing changes that you can do. It's not like you're canceling games. It's not like you're making games, you know, signing new deals, but it's essentially correcting things that have sort of stood in the way of their brand. Right. In other words, like, you know, changing the price of Game Pass. People were saying the prices of Game Pass going up was atrocious. Because it seemed like every 6 months the price had been going up. I'm like, what are you charging for? You're not making, you know, like, it's like you're charging more people for these things. For what? Like, you don't have anything that's absolutely special to it. You know, so what are you paying for? The same old service that you're getting before? You should drop that price instead of throwing it back up, which is good. And then also, you know, again, like the sort of nostalgia, you know, Xbox logo, and then naming the whole game division into Xbox again. These are very easy sort of like wins. It looks nice to the general public. The big question is, what is any of this going to mean later on? And you, like I have always said, it always takes about 4 years to really, you know, after these 4 to 5 years of whatever Phil signed into, you know, and things that have already been in development, have already been signed and already ready to done. Then after that point, that's when we'll start seeing some, you know, seeing the legitimate decisions that she had made.
Yeah.
I agree. Unless Sharma decides to do the Phil strategy and start acquiring big studios and artificially push back those dates or of Judgment. Oh, you know, yeah. Give me 10 more years. You know,
At least we won't need to hear wait until E3 or wait until whatever.
Wait until Summer Game anymore. Fest.
They wait until Summer Game Fest anymore, right?
Yep. Yeah. And also, Tony, just want to, and I think you caught it as well. I just want to give a shout out to Manny, because he said it without saying it. The sentiment that everyone's been saying, instead of I agree with what everyone's been saying.
I caught it too, but you know,
I was gonna do a Pee Wee moment.
Yeah, I was gonna bust it out, you know. And Brian,
we did, like, again, like we pulled what you know, Amazing Spider-Man Uncle Ben did. We're saying, with great power comes great responsibility, but without saying, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah. Brian, what are your thoughts, man, on, you know, Asha Sharma? And also, have you seen some of these crazy parasocial tweets over the weekend?
I have not seen the tweets, but at the same time, again, this is still like honeymoon phase, as was said. So let's see how things roll out, and let's see what she actually does do, rather than people saying that she might do or there's rumors to do. I am very much I'll judge it by what you do rather than what you say you do. So, but again, she could turn things around. That's always a possibility. Again, we said the same thing about Uncle Phil. Mm-hmm. He turned things around. So it's always a thing, but then also she can make things worse. So let's see what is done. Because again, it's all well and good having like the best of intentions. But obviously, if people stonewall you at every turn, then obviously you can't get much stuff done. But yeah, again, I am always hopeful that things can be turned around. So let's wait and see for Summer Games Fest.
The approval rating is always the highest as soon as the administration changes.
The honeymoon period, you know? Yeah. All right, let's move on. Shout out to Brett, by the way, who's joining us. Here's a question, another one from Mr. Dolly Yellow Nerd. I'm pretty sure you guys have brought up the idea that if GTA 6 doesn't do well, the entire industry could take a nosedive. Oh, not only did we bring it up, I'm going to say it right now. We pioneered that thought, you know? Primarily Brett, you know, he's the one that brought it up. Let's say that does happen. What else can we expect to see across the industry as a result of GTA 6 doing poorly? As in, what exactly would the nosedive look like? I like this, getting into details, you know? Again, I don't think it will, but let's just, you know, we're going with the fun hypothetical here. Because if GTA 6 doesn't do well, it's going to have, like, repercussions. And Brett, since you're the one that kind of pioneered this, you know, line of thinking, what else do you think would happen industry-wide if GTA 6 bombs?
The loss of confidence in legacy development and the abandonment of the pursuit of the quadruple A title.
Oh, shit. I agree with that. You know, I think people are going to look back and be like, okay, maybe we shouldn't spend $1 billion on a game. I'm sorry. $2 billion. That's how much GTA 6 is reportedly going to cost. You know, so I think that'll be the main one, you know, for sure.
I think it'll bring the concept into the mainstream of, like, for lack of a better term in gaming, what have you done for me lately? Yeah. You know, like, cool, you made a good game 10 years ago and then everybody quit. Why should we invest in you now? Like, it's at a certain point, investors are going to have to get savvy to the shell game that is this bullshit bait and switch of talent that's happening to them. And be like, look, you guys just keep leaking award-winning developers who are forming their own studios and fucking sweeping game awards. Meanwhile, we're sitting over here with them being bent over a fucking barrel. At a certain point, even people who are as out of it as some of the investors are going to eventually go, wait a minute, you didn't do anything for like 10 years. I don't know if I should be excited about this.
Yeah, that'll be for other games, because obviously GTA 5 is still making money, which is fucking insane to me, you know? But
oh, yeah, no. But, like, if GTA 6 doesn't hit,
yeah,
watch what happens to Todd Howard.
Oh, shit. Excuse me? Yeah, and, you know, you're only as good as your last game, and his last game was Starfield. So, yeah. Chris, I'm going to jump to you next. What do you think will happen if GTA 6 flops, you know, industry-wide, aside from what Rockstar will suffer?
I think, you know, for Rockstar, yeah, it would not be who Devis Leon, but then they're long. We talked about how much money, so they might be able to ride that bit, but the game is too far along into like course corrective or whatever reason causes it to flop. That's bad mechanics, better, whatever. For the industry as a whole, I think that it would be an interesting conundrum, because the main part of the experience, I would think that would drive the bias of everyone that has already failed with nobody wants single player narratives anymore. They want live service, and then push them in that direction, which is a dead end. And like, how many failures has Sony by themselves had in that pool, right? And same thing with EA and everyone else. Live services, nobody wants that shit. Nobody wants, you know, super microtransaction scenario. So I think that would set the wrong example in the industry. Big publishers, big developers would look at that failure as a bias for them being right, and then move further in that direction, which would be bad. But it's bad for them because it's a failing strategy. And I think you have more of the emergency stuff and kind of double A stuff. Like, I'm enjoying Mouse PI and I'm enjoying all this stuff. And honestly, who's gonna pick up the when that falls? Japan, China, South Korea, and the indie, right? That may just accelerate the collapse of an already ailing Western industry.
Mm. Yeah, that's kind of how I'm looking at it. Like, you know, unusually, I'm being a little positive about it. Like, it could be a good thing. You know, you have these big dinosaur, like legacy, you know, like franchises start kind of dying, maybe not dying off, but not being as prominent. And then smaller guys would come up and take their place, right? Because if GTA 6 bombs, that's going to leave a huge fucking hole, you know? So others may be able to come up in their place. I don't know what that would look like exactly, you know, because people are going to try to do their clones, but pretty interesting stuff, you know, if that does happen. But, you know, because it's like, how long can we sustain this shit, you know, with like massive budgets and all that crap, you know? But too early to tell, obviously. Yeah.
I mean, it's a, when Chris said it right there, I was like, also, there's also Japan, mm-hmm. Asia. They weren't having world record firings, nope. You know, this year, you know, and, you know, during all the pandemic stuff. In fact, the only reason, if any Japanese studio was ever really affected, is because they were connected to a giant Western studio.
Yep.
Like Tango Gameworks, which was connected to Xbox or / Microsoft, who had a big, or Bethesda, who had a big firing that time. Let's see, Japan Studio, which was connected to, you know, again, a big media, a big conglomerate company, which is very more Western facing than it is Japanese facing these days. You know, that's where you're sort of seeing those sorts of echoes, but. Have you heard of a Nintendo studio getting closed as of late? Capcom seems to be still doing quite well. In fact, they have another game that's going to be coming down. We'll see how that does. But they're already 3-3, right? You know, I think Japan in general, like, or at least Asia, has a good handle on whatever way that they're developing, and it's probably not so much to where it's actually killing. You know, it's siphoning money. Like, if you think about it, they had four games at development simultaneously.
Yeah.
You know, I think Pragmata being the first, you know, being the one that was more known, you know, out of all of them. And then obviously, you know, came descending order, which was, you know, Resident Evil, then, you know, the Monster Hunter game, and then Onimusha, which sort of came, were announced way later, but fairly close to when they, you know, fairly close to release.
So, yeah.
I don't know.
No, you're right.
Hey, Manny, I agree with you, but I have a serious question. Would Nintendo do layoffs, or would they just drive the whole company off a cliff as a whole? Because I'm pretty sure we saw that almost happen, and it seems like they're just like, yeah, we're all going to burn together or not. It doesn't. So, I don't know if they're ever going to trim the fat.
I don't know. Like, here's the thing. I don't think they ever really, like, build up that much. You know what I mean? Like, they seem to be sort of set in their ways. Like, have you ever seen Nintendo do an acquisition? Like, you know, like, in other words, buying up a bunch of studios? Like, during the pandemic, they didn't even change their projections.
Even though they made a shit ton of money.
And they made a shit ton of money. So it's like, it's a weird one. And like, you know, like obviously Iwata, you know, who passed away when they were sort of failing, he kind of took a pay cut, and a bunch of executives took a bunch of pay cuts to save the jobs of a bunch of people underneath everybody.
You would never see a Western executive do some shit like
you
that.
You never see. Yeah. Like Phil Spencer didn't take a fucking paycheck.
Pick up your phone.
Can you not do that?
But yeah, no, it's like, think about this, right? Nintendo, not only did all the executives take a pay cut, they also like, and you know, this is crazy when Japanese do it, they bowed for like half a minute, bro, stayed bowed.
Yeah, so they knew, you know? They knew that they fucked up. So it's like, it's a weird one because obviously Nintendo is also pretty Yakuza when it comes to a lot of things, but it's like, once you're, the thing about it is like, kind of like the Yakuza, once you're in, you're in. And you have to fuck up really badly, or you know dishonor yourself really badly, and they have to, you know, they don't fire you there, they kind of pressure you into leaving.
Yeah,
so they give you a window seat. Honestly, yeah. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I was just trying to be like, I don't know that, you know, when you said like, I don't know, I'm seeing Nintendo doing layoffs, I'm like, I don't know that they ever will, for better or worse.
You know, I mean, it's also very difficult to fire people in Japan, so there's also that.
Is that why they have that room where you don't do anything, but you also don't get paid?
Yeah, the window.
Yeah, like, so the way their system, at least the way development systems work, which is also really fucked up, is that they build up your paycheck by a bunch of bonuses. So essentially, you know, when you're getting a bunch of bonuses to equal up your current pay. When you get a window seat, they remove all of that, and then you're making back to what you originally got. You made
shit.
Which is could be really shitty money, and that's how they sort of pressure you. And this is all Japanese news. This is how they pressure people out of positions. So they want you. So they essentially pressure you to resign, as opposed to just outright saying you're fired.
Oh, that's fun. I was thinking you need to get unemployment.
Yeah.
Oh man. All right. Anybody else want to jump in on that before we go to the next question?
Yeah. Just. Overall, with Japanese studios, I think they showcase the collectivist society in terms of how they see things in terms of the East as opposed to the West. So that is also a big contributing factor to all this, because I mean, if you think about it, in the West, you know, you got all these people at the top, like what's the name of homeboy from Activision that got the golden parachute?
Oh, Kotick, yeah,
Bobby Kotick, yeah. Like. That dude was making more money than anyone could ever think of, while all of his employees, you know, either are getting laid off or, you know, or other stuff. So, you know, it's different methodologies to handle video game productions.
Yeah. All right. We'll move on here. Kuel. By the way, he asks us a shit ton of questions, but some of them weren't exactly pertinent. So I twiddled it down to two. First one is on Game Pass pricing. If you are in charge of Game Pass, how would you change the tiers and pricing? He goes, here's my idea. Have a super cheap Xbox Classic tier with all games older than 5 years, make it $7.95, and then have a core tier at $11.95. Then have packages like indie, a third party, day one, and ultimate package with everything. But he didn't detail prices for those. For me, yeah, have like an entry level tier for $9.99, and then like, you know, the everything tier, the ultimate tier for $19.99. Do not go above $19.99. Actually, I would even go further. Fuck that. I'm gonna go ham.
Did you?
Entry level for $5.99, and then ultimate $14.99. We're bringing it back to the original price. Fuck that. You want to bring people back? Bring that price down, son. You know.
Bring it back.
Okay, hold on a second. I got to call shenanigans on that one a little bit. Because when it was that price, everybody was talking shit about how it's not making money and it's not profitable and it's not feasible.
Yeah, that was before it was $30, Brett.
Okay, well, pick a fucking range is all I'm saying.
Yeah, it was before it went $30, bro. Things are different now, I mean, you know? Yeah.
Earlier, like, it's weird to me the amount of people who are like, nah, I'm not paying enough, and they're not making enough money for this to be a good idea. I'm like, fuck, stay in your lane. So yeah, I agree. I don't know if $15.99 is feasible for.
It's not. But I'm just throwing it out there. Fuck it.
Okay. Like, but how about this? Like, yeah, we can do a $10 entry. That's like all games from the two gens in past, right? And then one that's $5 up from there, and that's current gen and last gen. And then the $20 one is current gen games and day one releases. There.
Yeah, I think $20 is probably the realistic one, you know?
Dude, Netflix just jumped up to like $26. I think $20. I'm happy if a video game streaming service stays at $20 with the way everything else is skyrocketing. I'm not like trying to be a fucking bootlicker myself, but that's just everything is going up, so... The fact that Xbox just went down to 22 is almost kind of okay for what we're getting. But I wouldn't also mind, like, again, yeah, split it off. If there's people who want to play retro games, like old games, that's fine. But the problem is, any current gen games, they're trying to make evergreen systems, right? Like, if you even look on Steam, the discounts, like, games don't age out and get cheaper the way that they used to. And that's definitely intentional. So it's going to become a kind of generational thing. Indies could be a thing above it, sure, like so could, you know, a Call of Duty Pass edition. Just make it a fucking buffet where you can get like the base subscription and then like, yeah, add current gen for another five, you know, current gen and day one releases for another $5.99 and Call of Duty for another $5.99 and I don't know, your fucking AI girlfriend for another 5 minutes. I don't know what the fuck's going on anymore, but just, you know, just make it so fucking tiered. Not everybody needs to pay for everything. And then if something doesn't work and make money, you just cut that part. How's that? Like, if your 360 games aren't really pulling a lot of dough, maybe you don't focus a lot of manpower there. Just a thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do agree. And just real quick on the price, I mean, the reason why it wasn't as viable last time is because the competitors were more competitive with the prices. These days, like you mentioned, with Netflix and even Spotify and YouTube Premium, everything has exploded, like, ridiculously. So that, you know, a $15.99 price point today would be like, oh damn, yeah, this is mad cheap. But yeah, I do agree with the tiers for the most part. I mean, with QL, I think that's too many tiers. It's just gonna confuse people.
It's too make it.
I would say three tiers. And I like Quill's idea for the cheaper tier. It's like five year older games available. The middle tier can be, you know, 1 year or older, or even indies in day one indies. And then the ultimate tier is everything day one, excluding Call of Duty, because that shit is too expensive to carry through. But here's another thing. You have to, and this is my opinion, you have to make all these tiers cloud. Everything has to be accessible in the cloud, because that's how you keep even the casuals in. Oh, I can play this thing on my cell phone. Excuse me. I can play this on my TV. Excuse me. You know, that's the best way to keep everyone. Because if you're like, oh, well, you know, I can play this on my Xbox. When the hell do I log into my Xbox? I don't even have one. That shit's collecting dust. Like, that's the part where I'm like, don't make it in the cloud so it's available on your PC, on your phone. Even if they don't even play it, it's there and they can see and be like, oh, well, if I ever want to play it, if I'm on a train or something, or in a plane or something, or not, maybe not in a plane, but you know, it's still there.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. All right, anybody else? Xbox Game Pass pricing? How would you do it?
I just want to throw something like kind of on there, like about the whole Call of Duty thing. Like, Call of Duty can be its own thing. I'm going to go on a little bit of a soapbox right here. Back in my fucking day, I paid $15 a month, every goddamn month, for World of Warcraft. Me and, like, millions of other fucking people. This idea that you can't have a subscription-based game or a premium or even online-based game is kind of fucking ridiculous. We've just gotten sucked into this weird, warped place where you have people like who make Fortnite who want to not do anything. The difference with World of Warcraft is, yeah, you paid $60 usually a year for the expansion, then $15 a month, but you had constant new content coming out. It was a content mill. Not always even the best content, but it was a content mill. Not the same fucking loot death matches over and over again. That was actually inside the game. It was called Battleground. And somehow we've gone off into this place where, like, yep, here's the problem, is you're trying to have a subscription-based model. Here's a crazy fucking idea. A subscription-based model can work if you actually provide content. I just want to throw that in there.
Yeah, this is a good one. All right, anybody else? Game Pass pricing tiers? All right, we're going to just go with Carlos's idea. I like that one. All right, moving on. Another one from Mr. Quells. Kind of related. This one's interesting. How do you think live service games need to change to make them interesting again?
Again,
yeah.
I mean, again, I'm probably the wrong person to even be talking about that, because I've never found a service game at all interesting. Yeah. Because it just feels like a giant rope-a-dope. Where it's like, okay, what, you're just going to keep me around and putting the carrot on the stick with the same cycle of stuff over and over again? I still find it weird how people are so obsessed with Destiny when it's literally the same thing over and over and over again. And I felt like when I played that demo of that thing, I was like, oh man, I know what this rope is in. I can't really comment onto whether how I can make a service game interesting, because I don't.
Yeah. Brett, I know you want to chime in.
I mean, I played a lot of service games. They're like MMOs. I played service games before they were service games. And yes, I agree with Manny's assessment. Also, when I played Destiny, for a completely different reason. I was like, oh, I see what this rope-a-dope is. I'm not falling for this shit. I know he's like, oh, it's a service game. I was like, oh, this is shallow and expensive. So it's kind of funny. Like, we came from different sides and both looked at it from opposite angles and went, this is bullshit in unison.
It's because I could see where the gears were and I didn't like it. I could see what the cycle was. It was like, oh, you want me to consistently pick up this random gear all the damn time, and every single time I fight a boss or an enemy, the dice rolls, and then I might get something good, I might get something bad. I don't want a dice roll. I want a good gun. I want a good gun.
Yep, there's people out there who are not really gonna like what I'm about to say, but first time I picked it up, I went, oh, it's just Warcraft for idiots.
I remember when you said that too.
See?
Yeah.
Witness.
But yeah, no, I mean, obviously there was a time where at least half of us in here were playing live service games together. Destiny, The Division, you know. And it was really more about just hanging out, having fun, you know. But
is Monster Hunter considered one?
I think it is.
Okay.
I think it is. In Monster Hunter.
I guess that there you go, folks. That's the live service game I played.
Yeah.
I guess.
It's live service light.
Yeah, live service. Yeah.
Depending on the frustrating part, like a live service game doesn't even necessarily have to be good. It just has to be a digital third place.
Yeah, so, that's what it was for us. Like, Brett, you and I have our misgivings about Destiny. We sunk a lot of hours together into that fucking game. You know?
It doesn't have to be good. Again, like we talk about the erosion of the third place in our culture. There are plenty of digital third places, and that, like, it, for some reason, people just seem to miss that mark. Like, oh, that's weird. People don't have anywhere to hang out, and yet they're playing the same Call of Duty map and Fortnite map over and over and over again for no reason. It's like they're having fun doing the same thing over and over again. I wonder what could be the key variable there. Honestly, at this point, I don't trust half these people to find their ass from a hole in the ground. I'm quickly becoming more and more disillusioned, which is a dangerous thing because I'm a pretty cynical bitch to begin with.
Brett, you know what I'm going to say? You weren't cynical enough, man. You got to dial that shit up. You got to get on my level, bro. You got to get on my level, motherfucker.
Yeah, barely.
All right. How do we make live service games great again?
Oh, no.
Hey, we get either get rid of the idea of the season pass or do what we said that we were going to fucking do with it to begin with, right? Get rid of this horse armor bullshit DLC and actually make the deal with gamers. We will continue to charge you money and we will continue to provide you experience that you would like to continue doing. We will just give you more of the same for more money. Bearsies? It was a very simple agreement to begin with, and y'all fucked it up. Just go back to the original agreement. Gamers are surprisingly forgiving. We have long memories, but if you go back and start treating gamers right, be like, look, we're just going to make DLC. It's going to be a little bit less money, and boom, there you go. Like, Miles Morales should have been DLC. It should have been a $20 DLC. Perfect example right there.
Yeah. All right. What about the rest of you guys? How do you make live service games great again?
You bring up something new to the table, or at least a new twist that gets everyone hooked. I mean, I didn't play the game, but I understood why it blew up. But Ark Raiders, you know, did something interesting. So you gotta innovate. You can't rely. What's up?
So what the fuck was Ark Raiders? Was that an offshoot of Ark? I've always been confused about this.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think they're friendly. ARC.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, fuck, dude, like, Ark is still big in fucking Steam. Like, it's weird. Some of these live service games are not the ones that you expect.
Ark Raiders is different than Ark the Dinosaur game, just so we're clear.
Yeah.
Yes. I was that's what I was asking, because I was like, I still see Ark the Dinosaur game popping up in popularity. I'm like, this shit's fucking playing? What the fuck?
Yeah, there's Ark ARK, the dinosaur game, and then there's Ark ARC, the shooting game, or whatever.
Which one's being played?
Yeah. What happened? Say that again.
I said, which one's being played more?
The shooting game or the extraction game, probably.
I can look it up.
Yeah, look it up. Yeah, who's playing what more, Ark or Ark?
which Ark are they on?
Yeah, but this is. Oh, I like that, Manny. It's interesting too. Like, I want to actually check this because, like, what's weird is every time I check the Steam charts, the online games that are dominating are like, wait, that's not the one that I was expecting. So
it's Ark Raiders.
It's, of course it is. Yeah, no one's talking about Ark the Dinosaur game.
I guarantee you it's probably still... Well, I can't guarantee you. I bet you it's in the top 20.
It's not, but it's top 50. So it's 49, which is, I mean, it's decent.
There you go, Brent. Top 50.
I mean, that's still a drop. I mean, respectable drop. That shit is old and dated as fuck. I put that shit up a decade ago. So the fact that it's even in the top 50 is fucking kind of bullshit.
I'm curious.
And Ark Raiders is number 12.
I'm just Carlos. Where's Marathon?
Excuse me.
I can take a look.
That's another live service game.
Brought a switchblade to its base.
Marathon is number 67.
Wow. The fucking dinosaur game's doing better.
That's what I wanted to know. I was pretty sure Bananas I was right. Better. I was like, Ark the Dinosaur game is probably beating Marathon.
both Crimson and Black Desert are doing better in there.
Oh, shoot. Damn. That's wild, man. All right. Yeah, what's up, bro?
I got an answer to this question.
Uh-oh.
You said how to make a live service game better?
Yes.
Well, this is a very simple answer, Tony. Don't name the game Concord, High Guard, or Fair Games. That's it.
That's it. That's all you need.
Just don't omit any of the Concordian timeline game. You'll be good.
Oh, man. Oh, that's funny. All right, man. Let's move on. Mr. Lego Bro. This one's interesting. Do you guys think Microsoft set Phil Spencer up for failure before he retired? And now that they're letting Asha Sharma have free reign amid all the rumors. I don't know if they set him up for failure, but I do think they threw Sarah Bond under the bus. Like, yo, it's that bitch's fault. She did it. It's her. Oh, man.
Nobody liked her anyway.
Man, we didn't like her, man. She stank up the place.
My opinion has changed.
Yeah, what's up, Brett?
So my opinion has changed after seeing the dumpster fire that their parent company has become.
Yeah, I mean.
All of a sudden, it ever makes sense. Like, I had a, you know, y'all know I took a break from PC gaming. This shit got expensive there for a minute. So I wasn't dealing with Windows and its bullshit, and I wasn't really in the ecosystem and didn't realize how fucking terrible Microsoft as a parent company had gotten. Now that I've stepped back in and seen it with fresh eyes, I'm like, oh, this explains everything.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. You've been away from it for so long. But for me, who deals with it every day, it's like, wait, how did you not know? Because I live in that world. But yeah, I could just imagine. It's like, you just come back and like, what happened to Windows? What the fuck? Because it's terrible now. Again, I am now streaming this podcast from a fucking MacBook. I'm tired of Windows, bro. It's too much bullshit.
That could be reasoning for the pivot. Obviously, we've heard about things that Microsoft being changed around because of all that bullshit AI garbage that they were fully investing in. So now they're going back.
That has not changed. What needs to change in Windows is to get rid of all the web wrappers, all the Electron bullshit native apps. That's a huge problem. Yeah. That's why you see performance hits and crashes. They cheaped out. Yeah, they're not making native applications. Even like calculator and stuff is a web wrapper, and they're coding in TypeScript. It's very stupid.
Yeah, but anyway, let's bring it back to Phil Spencer, because we could go off on fucking Microsoft, you know? Go ahead. Phil Spencer, Brett. Let's bring it back. Phil Spencer.
Yeah, well, no, okay. So I'm tying it together now. Like, I think it's relevant because you see, like, no, I don't think they set up Phil Spencer. I just genuinely don't think they know what the fuck they're doing as a company.
I agree with that.
I think for the last 5 years, they have been chasing the idea of FOMO, shareholder profits, AI, and the fact that their most profitable division has been cloud computing, and it has led them to make a series of catastrophic decisions so bad that they don't even know what the fuck they're doing anymore, and everybody of any value has abandoned the company, leaving it a ghost town full of morons.
I agree. I agree with that. You know, they're chasing this AI shit, and look, it's not doing well because everyone's hating and everybody's turning against it, you know?
One of the big things, and my last thing too, is like this OneDrive bullshit that kept like forcing you to try and buy their storage files by literally taking files off of your computer kind of thing. Like, I have seen entire communities pivot away from Mac, or not Mac, Windows, since I kind of went back into the space. In fact, I think France just moved away from it to begin with. Like, to whole Linux. Fucking countries and ecosystems are just dropping Windows, which is...
To Linux.
Yeah, to Linux, yeah.
Yeah, which is... Like, I cannot state this, how terrible this is for Microsoft. This is probably the single worst thing since IBM bit it back in the day to happen to a computer company. They have fucked up royally, and it has led to, like, company-wide desperate last pivot changes in an effort to try and not implode on themselves, or otherwise they're just going to be taken out by Google here in the next few years.
Yeah.
You know what the other revenue driver at Microsoft is, Brett?
Oh, God, do I want to know? Is it Azure?
No. Well, no, you said cloud computing. It's Azure. That's the main one. The second one is enterprise support.
God damn it. Of course. God, son of a bitch. Yep. I mean, see, and there's the problem. When I talk about alignment and motives, like their alignment is that their motives are not aligned with ours. They are just, oh, yep. That it's really interesting how, like, a company becomes so bullshit when you turn it against the customers.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, real quick, I have to address this. Pablo Fumale on YouTube says, "I love Windows. The original creator of Mac. I'm guessing he's talking about Steve Jobs, an asshole. Bill Gates is an asshole too. They're all assholes, bro. They're all assholes.
Wait. Yeah, we're comparing them. They're all
assholes. They're all fucking assholes, bro.
Yeah. Wait a minute. One over the other, really? They're all a bunch of clowns.
They're all scum.
I mean, to be honest, like I
who was found on the rape island?
Also, didn't he like give his wife an STD on purpose or some shit?
Yes, Bill Gates did that. He knowingly gave it to her and then had like somebody slip medication to her without her knowing it, so she wouldn't get it or some bullshit like that. Some fucked up shit. You know?
Yeah.
Let me just cover our asses. Allegedly.
Allegedly. Thank you, Carlos. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Pablo, you could love Bill Gates. We are not supporting Bill Gates around here, bro. And again, it's all alleged stuff, but they're all assholes. Every single one of these CEOs are all assholes. I don't need allegations about it. They're all assholes, you know. But we're getting horribly off track here. So go back to Phil Spencer. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Anybody? Do you honestly believe Xbox set him up for failure?
No, I don't think so either.
Yeah, I think he set himself up for failure.
I'm not going to turn back into it, but the problem is that, like, when you say we're getting wildly off topic, no, we're not. That's the problem.
Microsoft, right? I mean, yeah, that's true. You know, that is true.
All the shit is wrapped up together.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're going off topic because we started talking about fucking Steve Jobs. That's what I mean, going off topic. You know?
Well, I mean, we're talking about, it was Steve Jobs set up? No. Steve Jobs was the victim of an incompetent parent company, which is now desperately pivoting. There. Sorry. I should have just said that.
Yeah. You mean Phil Spencer, not Steve Jobs, but yeah.
Yep, sorry.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on. We all agree they didn't set him up for that. All right. Another one, Mr. Lego Bro. Should other big publishers look to Capcom's recent success with their single player games? Maybe.
I mean, they're levered. I mean, they are the only one that's not paying Unreal a tax. One of the few studios that's not paying an Unreal tax like everybody else is out there. And not to mention that all their development, any developments that they have inside of their games all benefits all the other titles. So, you know, the hair tech that they did in Pragmata probably helped out Resident Evil and vice versa. So they all had things that they were sort of helping themselves out. Should other companies look to do something like that? Well, I'll say this. Developing your own engine is incredibly expensive. It takes a while. You know, like we started seeing RE Engine, like, you know, obviously with that RE6, and they've just been, you know, continuously working with it's the new MT framework. I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's a unique sit. They were smart and set themselves up early. In order for anybody else to sort of do that, they'd have to do this a similar thing. You know, don't have like 1,000 people on each one of your teams. You know, like if you look at all after the launch of every single title, they actually show the teams, and each one of those teams is in, you know, some of them are bigger than others. Obviously, the Resident Evil one had like, you know, maybe about 100. Same thing with Pragmata. So that, you know, 150 people, you know, like depending on what title they're sort of doing. So I don't know.
Yeah, but it's hard for other companies like Capcom is still family owned, you know, and they're still.
Yes. Also, yeah they're still family owned. Granted, they're also part of it is owned by a certain country.
Another family we are not happy about, you know. Pablo, why are you still talking about Steve Jobs? This is a video game podcast, bro.
Yeah, come on. Listen, you get it. You know, it's just a person. It's just an executive. Yeah,
and he's dead. Who cares? He's dead.
Also, he was also incredibly abusive. But let's just set that aside.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, Capcom. Again, it's difficult to say that because every company is different. You know, it's like you can't.
Yeah,
like
not everything works for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and even though Capcom is obviously also beholden to shareholders, you know, they still are in control of their own destiny, which is something a lot of video game companies cannot say. Ubisoft is absolutely not in charge of their fucking destiny. You know, not with 3,000 employees or whatever the hell they have. 2 hour credits for Assassin's Creed Shadows. I am not making this up. You know, so man, I remember. I think it was Assassin's Creed. Revelations. It was a big deal when you find out that it were 800 employees, you know, excuse me, 800 developers behind that game. That's chump change now, you know, compared to some of these other games. So yeah, Capcom is in a very unique spot, so it's difficult to replicate that, you know. But the lesson they could take from Capcom, which they won't, is make games people want to play. I know that's crazy, wild idea, but maybe instead of like looking at focus groups or asking like these fucking people who never play video games, what check boxes do we need? Ask your fucking fans. Oh, what do you guys want? That's what Capcom does, you know, and Sega too, by the way.
Yeah, imagine that.
They have surveys, man. I know you're going to bring that up.
Yeah, yeah. They do a survey every single time.
Yeah. Imagine that. Ask your fans, what do you guys want? You know, because remember when Capcom fucked up, remember they were Crapcom for a while because they were chasing trends, right? Trying to be like Western studios. She was flopping. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what? We're back to basics, you know, and they could do that because it's a family owned company. You know, it's a very unique situation with Capcom, you know. Hopefully the fucking Saudis don't take more. You know, Capcom, stop it. Nip it in the bud, bruh. You know? That hashish or whatever ain't worth it, you know? What the fuck they have over there? You know, fucking magic carpets and shit. It's not worth it, man. You know? all right. Moving on here. Mr. Matt Wheaton. First question. This one's interesting. I didn't even know this was a game. This is really for the metalheads here. What are your thoughts on the band Voivod making it a Metroidvania game? I had no fucking idea. You know, I had to look it up. It's called The Nuclear Warrior, and apparently this band is, associated with
Jason Newsted?
I don't know if Jason Newsted is in Voivod. He might still be, but that's the thing about Voivod. Their claim to fame is that Jason Newsted joined them after Metallica. That's not that great.
Yeah, that's it. I mean,
yeah, the Canadian band. You know, they kind of had a weird sound. I always try to get into them, but it just never worked for me. Since I'm not a fan of the band, am I really going to check out this game? But, you know, good on them, I guess. But remember, just because a band makes a game doesn't mean it's good. Remember that fucking Iron Maiden video game? That wasn't very good, you know? I think the only one that was good, it wasn't even an Aerosmith game. There was, like, just had the soundtrack, you know? But
Revolution X?
Yeah, I was in an Aerosmith game. They were just kind of sort of in it. But, yeah, I didn't know about that.
For the win.
What?
Brutal Legend is still the best.
Yes, absolutely. That is the best metal game ever. No doubt about it. All right, next question here. This one's interesting. What would you consider the RPG of this generation? Personally, it'd be Xenoblade Chronicles 3 for obvious reasons. I don't know what those obvious reasons are. But others are endearing like Metaphor and Clair Obscur. You know, I don't think I've played an RPG this generation that's really like, oh my fucking God, this is it. This is the one, you know? What about the rest of you guys? Actually, Carlos, do you agree it's clear obscure?
I mean, that's the standout. Well, at least one of the standouts for sure. I would put it there. Yeah. It's got everything. It's got a story, it's got turn based, it's got the baguettes.
Okay.
It's got the integration to the combat with the parry and the dodge system as well, which is something that adds a little more of a dimension to the traditional turn based. So yeah, I think that's a good one. And I would like to answer for Rich as well. It's not gonna be clear obscure because he still needs to beat that game. But I'm pretty sure he's gonna say Sea of Stars.
Ooh. Rich, what do you say about that?
Well, that is a very, very interesting answer by Mr. Carlos Romero. I very much enjoyed Sea of Stars. So that I think that's pretty high on the list. I'm going to take a minute to think and see if there was anything else that I could think about as far as RPGs are concerned. But yeah, no, that's pretty high on my list still.
Yeah. Brett, I hope you don't mind. I'm going to answer for you.
Go ahead.
Baldur's Gate 3.
Thank you. Could you hear my incredulous look?
Yes. But go ahead, expand on it. Why do you think it's the best RPG of this generation?
I mean, besides the fact that it's made by one of the best publishers ever, and the fact that it brought bear fucking to the public, I don't know, man, like, the fact that it probably single-handedly saved CRPGs from being considered an extinct genre of gaming probably helps.
I mean, that's a good point. Anybody else? RPG of the generation? Actually, Rich, do you have an answer now? I don't think anybody else does.
All right, I'm going to be upset if you don't back me up on this shit.
Well, I played it like the first 3 hours. Does that count?
No, I said Brian. Okay.
Yeah, Brian, what are you? What's your RPG of the generation?
I'm still deciding.
Uh-oh.
It's an interesting battle. Again, I haven't played Sea of Stars, so unfortunately I can't back up Rich on that. I haven't played Baldur's Gate 3, but I have played the Divinity games, so I presume
Brian.
It is more the same. It's like if you played Black Ops 1, Black Ops 2, you can safely assume Black Ops 3 would just be more Black Ops. Am I wrong?
It's more Divinity, bro. It's
yeah. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that it's more of that. So I think it's safe to say that it's also really good, but then also you have Expedition 33, which is also really good. And then I'm still like neck deep in Crimson Desert, and it just seems like it just keeps going and going. Like I haven't
picked up that crack pipe yet. Jesus, you'll never hear from me again.
Ooh, does
I can't
Brian, Crimson I Desert would count as an RPG, right?
Yes.
It would. Oh,
which is annoying because that's also really good, but it has areas that aren't so good, but has areas that are, I think, are stand out in that, yeah, this is how games should be. But hence the question is that it's a very interesting situation. I can't answer it, but I am leaning
really
towards, I know me, it's weird, I can't answer it. But at this time, I am leaning more towards Baldur's Gate 3. However, Crimson Desert is like right there. Crimson Desert is nipping on the heels, as they would say, in my opinion. So yeah. I guess come back when the generation is done, which is probably 2 years' time by the sounds of it.
Yeah. All right, Rich, you have an answer now?
Yeah, I want to give an honorable mention to Cyberpunk 2077.
Oh, that does count, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I also want to make this comment because you guys were talking earlier about if for some reason Grand Theft Auto is a flop, which obviously I don't believe that's going to happen, but if that is a flop, that'll be, I think, one of the last companies that people thought, Rockstar Games, they're untouchable. Because we thought the same about CD Projekt Red until we got that launch of Cyberpunk 2077. Now, they have rebounded, which is great, but let's see what happens with The Witcher 4.
Oh, Rich, you just made me realize, like, there are 20-year-olds out there, fully grown adults, who are buying liquor. Who don't remember Rockstar as a developer. Like a multi-game developer.
Yeah, that's right. They're just an ETA company. That's crazy.
They've never heard of Manhunt.
No, they don't know fucking Midnight Club. That's what this hat is. Yes, they used to make racing games.
They don't know Bully.
Not anymore.
They don't know Bully. They don't know Noir.
They don't know Table Tennis.
Table Tennis.
forgot a Rockstar Stapleton.
Tony, what you meant to say is that they used to make games.
They used to make games, yes. Now they're just a service. Yeah, they make game. My God.
Dude, I forgot how many games they made.
They made a lot of games.
They should be called, their parent company should be called Take One.
You know, excuse me. That's funny. Yeah, you know what? Since I didn't answer, yeah, it's my default Cyberpunk. This game's fucking amazing, you know? But yeah, I haven't really played a lot of like RPGs. I played a lot of RPGs this generation, but nothing like there hasn't been a Dragon Quest XI that I've played this generation. That game is still with me, you know? I would name that shit again. What's up?
Qualifier. Is it because of Phantom Liberty or without Phantom Liberty?
Without,
would it still be there?
Even without Phantom Liberty, I was already enamored by this game.
Right. Nope.
What happened?
Yeah, Tony.
I was just asking. I wasn't challenging. I was just curious, man.
Oh, yeah. No. I know you weren't challenging. But, yeah, no, this was before. Phantom Liberty just made it better. But I was already like, yeah, this game's the shit even before that, you know? What were you saying, Carlos?
So I prefer Cyberpunk over Clair Obscur.
Yeah.
But if you ask me what RPG is better, and I just think about it from an RPG lens, then I would say Clair Obscur.
Yeah.
I understand why Cyberpunk.
I haven't played it yet, so that's why I can't talk about Clair Obscur. You know what I'm saying?
But I'm just adding a clarification on my answer. Like I don't think Clair, because I answered with Clair Obscur, but I think Cyberpunk is a better game.
Yeah.
But I don't think Cyberpunk is as good of an RPG as Clair Obscur. So that's why Clair Obscur was my answer, because Cyberpunk is just, you know, it's a lot of games, including RPG.
I respect that answer.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. All right, moving on here. I think that was it for all from Matt Wheaton. Yes, it is. All right, next up, Eurocar 9, son.
I know that guy.
He's a good guy. This one's interesting. Are there any retro games that you have thought about or are thinking about purchasing for your collection? I'll just answer now. No, I don't collect games. You know, that's done, man. I tried for a little bit, and I was like, "Yo, this shit is too fucking expensive." You know, and I got hoodwinked a few times with fucking replica cards. I'm like, okay, I'm good. Let me step out of this shit, you know? So that's a negatory for me, good buddy. What about you, Chris? Are you done with game collecting, or are you still doing it?
I've slowed down. I had a few things I was looking for, like kind of Bloodlines. I found them eventually. So my collection things I had on it, I got most of them. Like things like Earthbound, I'm never going to get. That game is like over $1,000 without case. Or I'm like, yeah, like you said, it's too expensive. And I have hit repro stuff as well. Like I got a copy of Alien Soldier, the treasure game.
Yeah.
On Genesis. That shit, I opened it up. I'm like, this shit is fucking fake. Anyway, so I'm kind of slowed down. I haven't gone to, we have a show in Austin, Classic Game Fest. I haven't gone.
Man, I remember we used to go to that. Yeah.
Every year.
For no reason whatsoever, Carlos.
Yes, yeah, so it's an interesting question because I you know, recently I thought about selling all my stuff. I was like, oh, I can make a good chunk of change by selling all my stuff because I'm not using it. I decided against it at the end, but during that time I did a lot of research and I, you know, got a lot. My algorithm, you know, half of my algorithm now is just retro games.
Yeah. That's fun.
So it's, you know, I get all that stuff recommended to me, and you know, made me think like, man, I should, you know, it would be cool to get some of my old games back. You know, primarily the ones that I think about are the Legend of Zelda games, because most of them, at least the older ones, the N64 ones, the Super Nintendo ones, those I never bought. Like those I always played, you know, my neighbor's house, you know, so I never really bought those games. Until Twilight Prince. No, I think it was Wind Waker. Wind Waker or Twilight Princess, but I can't even find those copies. I don't know where those copies went to. So it would be cool, you know, if I could get at least that series in physical copies. But yeah, I do agree. There's a lot of scammers out there that, you know, give you, you know, what do you call it? Replicarts? I would probably go to like a more reputable place. Hopefully that have lesser success at scamming me, but we'll see. Those Zelda games are pretty expensive, so we'll see.
Yeah. Anybody else here still collecting games?
I mean, I still buy physical games, but as far as like retro stuff, I think I'm sort of good on whatever I would have. Like, you know, I sort of like I kind of want a lot of these guys to sort of start re-releasing some of them, you know, some, especially some of the other ones, you know, the ones that haven't been around for a while. Like, I did see a thing from Treasure saying that, that they're going to be doing Guardian Heroes.
Yeah.
Mm. So that's pretty cool stuff.
All right. Anybody else game collecting? I'm going to take that as a no. So we'll move on. Another one from Mr. Eurocar Nines. He goes, and let me finish. The Legend of Zelda movie is supposed to come out in 2027. In your opinion, do you think there's a way to make a good Zelda movie? I'm asking in terms of the source material in hand and the fact that it's a Nintendo IP. So I don't want this to turn into a movies today suck conversation. I'm just asking if at any time a good Zelda movie could ever be made, and what type of movie would it need to be in order to be great, in your opinion? Also important to note, this question is not meant to ask whether you're interested in the upcoming Zelda movie. A lot of disclaimers there. For no reason whatsoever, Carlos, you can go first.
That is definitely a phenomenal question. I'm leaning towards no.
Uh-oh.
And here's the thing. The only way I can see Zelda being great is if it's dark, if it's gritty, if it's violent. And I don't think Nintendo is capable of that. I for this new movie that comes out, and I haven't really seen too much on it, just the fact that it's going to come out in some screenshots, it feels like Nintendo isn't capable of making it gritty, just for the simple fact that they want this to be everyone's game, or the everyone's movie, kind of like how they did with Super Mario, where, you know, Super Mario Galaxy got a lot of bad reviews because of the story and stuff. But everyone loved it because of the member berries, and it's almost doing a billion at this point. Jeez. So I feel like they're what they'll try to do with Zelda, and Sony's making this movie, so we'll see what Sony does, Sony Pictures, that is. So hopefully they can make it gritty. Like, the only way I see it, like, if they do sort of like Lord of the Rings type of thing, you know, I feel like that's the way to go with Zelda. I just don't think that Nintendo would allow anything like that. But who knows?
Yeah. Brett. Yeah, Brett, what about you? Because you're a Zelda fan.
I am. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm torn. Honestly, I felt like they did a really good job with the Mario movies. And I'm trying to think if they can make a serious, not kind of tongue-in-cheek, self-aware Zelda game. Ooh. And I don't think that they can without making it seem like Timu Lord of the Rings. Because, yeah, they're I don't know. Not the way that they're doing it, no. Because the way that they're doing it looks like they just asked ChatGPT to make a realistic Zelda movie.
Yeah.
It does not look like a thing or a fit. Like, even if you look back to the original source material from when we were growing up, like, they're you know, fuck. Like, even the Excuse Me Princess seemed a little bit closer to Zelda to Link than that shit. Like, so for me, where the sweet spot hit is, I didn't even know there was another Mario movie. But I just recently ran across a bit where, like, I guess they showed Star Fox. And, like, just that little bit when they first meet Star Fox, fucking awesome. Like, that is beautiful, amazing fan service right there. They didn't make Star Fox out to be a bitch. They just made, you know, a hilariously kind of self-aware, not too serious, because it's based on a fun video game kind of thing. So, you know, I think they should go that route with it. If they try to go to dreamy 80s dark fantasy hyper realism, they're just, yeah, gonna look like they're AI bullshit.
Yeah. Anybody else? Can they make a good Zelda game? I'm refraining from this one because I don't care. Like, I don't give a shit.
A Zelda movie? Yeah.
Yeah, Zelda movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't care either, because that. It goes back to, we always talk about this video game active parties and Link is silent. You're supposed to project yourself into the character of the world. So watching a movie of that is very difficult to translate anything. Like, I honestly, like, I kind of enjoyed the Street Fighter because they leaned into the insanity of Street Fighter. So it looks fun, right? I'm not saying it's good. It just looks fun. But with Zelda, I don't know. And I was doubtful from the beginning. I know Avi Arad was helming it, or like, well, fuck that. I don't have.
He wants the whole armor to be in the movie.
Yeah, I know. I do not like it, but honestly, it doesn't matter. I took Galaxy movie. I thought it was. I liked it. Yeah, Carlos is right, but they did the member berries right in there. You could do member berries and overload people where it's like it's obvious, but they kind of Illumination sprinkled it in the right place. It worked. I don't think it was okay. But the member berries. With Zelda, I honestly, I don't have, like, Kristen loves Zelda. He loves Zelda at times. I don't have that love for it. So it's like, I don't really care. I don't think they should have made the movie. And if they did maybe, which it's Nintendo, right? You couldn't have hit up an animation studio in Japan. You couldn't have made an anime.
Yeah.
Why would you make it?
That's like, where I'm at. Like, if it would have been an anime, I would have been all on board, man.
Yeah, the fact that it's live action is a turnoff. Yeah.
Yeah, I do agree. It's kind of ridiculous not to get Link. But I'm curious. I have a question for Chris. If they did a anime Zelda movie or series or whatever, do you still think that Link should be voice acted? I wonder if that's a hurdle that they might not even ever overcome. I think in animation
you can get away with him not. He makes noises. You might be able to get away with him not verbalizing too much, maybe a little bit at the end of the movie or whatever. But remember, your point, I think, is correct. Like, they should make it dark and gritty. And I think in an anime format, something like Attack on Titan or whatever, you could get away with a lot more stuff and make it dark and gritty. And I think the anime studio like MAPPA or whatever in Japan could talk to that. Whereas I don't think Sony or whatever is going to talk to that live action, getting that dark grittiness. Like, how much blood do you think we're
going to...
Not much, probably.
In live action, none. But like in anime, you could have been like, oh, but they're pig demons, so they're not people.
Yeah, exactly. So if he blows them up with an arrow, it's...
Yeah,
like that would have been the way that, yes, I agree. If they, anime would be how they could have actually done it, like gritty and, you know, honestly, the Ford aged Link to the Past kind of deal that we all want. Like, I think secretly all adults are like, okay, but what if, because like the timeline split and every Link is fucking different and all that, like, what if you had Apocalypse, adult Apocalypse Link come back, like, as an adult from like the Hyrule Apocalypse, pull like an Evil Dead 3 shit, like, that'd be pretty dope, but nobody's ever going to do it because it's too off-brand, but we all want it.
All right, moving on. Last two questions for Mob Hits. All right, have remakes been what has carried this generation, and do you think that these remakes make great filler between actual new game releases? Yeah, I mean, that's all we've gotten this generation, remakes and shit. You know, everything's a remake. And the problem is, yeah, we don't get enough new games, so we have to fill it in with remakes, you know? Sad state of the industry, man, you know?
Is it good filler, though?
Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. Sometimes it is, sometimes
it's
it isn't.
It's good filler. It's good filler when the gaps between actual releases are small. If you're filling a year gap between two original or new games with, you know, a whole bunch of remasters, then I would say it's not a good filler.
You know, how many times has The Last of Us been remade this generation alone, bro? It's insane.
Too many.
Too many. Yeah. So yeah, again, With development cycles taking so long for main games, that's why we've gotten all these remakes. And let's just be honest, people buy the remakes, so it gives the companies incentive to buy them. You know, the way it is, man. You guys have any thoughts on that? Nope.
Not really.
Yeah. Yeah. We like Demon's Souls. That was a good one. That was a good remake. And we like the Resident Evil.
Oh, not for a Blue Point.
Yeah. So Blue Point, you know,
Shadow of the Fiddle is legitimately a Blue Point and Japan Studios' last game.
Yeah. What's going on, Sketch? My brother. He goes, because they don't want backwards compatibility. I don't know why. I don't know what that has to do. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the other thing with remakes, right? You know, it's like, hey, you know that old game that you had? Buy it now. It's just cheaper and shinier. What's going on, brother? All right, and the last question of the night. This one's for anybody who cares about Evo. With Evo season officially kicking off next weekend, I'll get into that. With Evo season kicking off next weekend, what are some announcements you're looking forward to seeing from major fighting game developers? It's season now because there are like 5,000 Evos, which I'm not happy about. In my opinion, there should only be one Evo, you know? Maybe two, maybe Japan, which is the first one that kicks off next week. What's up? I heard something. Oh, well.
Sorry, be mom and dogs.
Yeah. Evo in Riyadh, Evo in fucking France, Evo probably somewhere in the South, you know, Pacific. It's like it's a lot, you know. But yeah, as far as announcements, I want to see. Actually, first I want to see if that rumor with Street Fighter VI is true. Is Tifa going to come to the game? I'm leaning towards she's not, but it'll be interesting regardless. What I do want to see is the match this weekend with Mena RD, who is now currently the best Street Fighter player ever. He challenged Daigo Umehara. You guys know who he is. So he challenged him. So it's going to be a clash of the new and the old. I want to see. I'm torn, right? Because, like, on the one hand, I want to see Daigo win because it's Daigo. But on the other hand, Mena RD's Dominican. He's like, oh, shit. What do we do here? So that'll be fun. But, yeah, I want to see that. As far as announcements, I want to see more Marvel Tokon stuff. Even though we're probably going to get Tokon stuff probably during Summer Game Fest, I suspect. But yeah, what else am I looking forward to? I think those are the major ones. I feel like there's something missing, but those are major ones. Does anybody else care what they're going to be announcing at Evo? Oh, hold on. Sketch goes, I want to see Street Fighter finally come to an end. Damn! Bring back some Dead or Alive. Well, bring back Dead or Alive and Virtua Fighter. Well, Virtua Fighter is already coming back. So is Dead or Alive. And I want to see announcements for those too, especially Virtua Fighter. We had that one kind of trailer like a year and a half ago now, you know, that tech demo of Sarah, excuse me, quote unquote, whatever the fuck her name is now, versus Akira. Yeah, VF trailer. I agree, Jeff. We need that new VF, like a full trailer, not just a tech demo. Jeffrey, what's quote unquote Sarah's name now? She has a new fucking name. It's not really her anymore. I want to see that. I want to see a new Virtua Fighter. And we're probably not going to get too much on Dead or Alive because they're probably going to focus on, you know, bringing back Six again. Brett left because he said, fuck fighting games, you know. Nina Williams. Bring her to Dead or Alive. Oh, that would be interesting. Make Tekken come back from the dead. I think that thing is done. Tekken 8. Put that shit out to pasture. Everyone hates it. No one hates Tekken more than Tekken fans, and they're not happy right now, you know? Not Sarah. There you go. Whatever the fuck her name. Stella. That's her name. Stella. You know? Hey, Jeff, do we have to pay for that Daigo match? Because that would be some bullshit. Because I heard, I know the Capcom Cup, they're making you pay for stuff now, which I'm not happy about. Tekken 8 is not bad, Sketch, but the hardcore guys are not happy with it. You know, I liked it because it's fucking aggressive, you know, and it looks nice. But, you know, you and I might be special, like you said. But, yeah, regardless, I'm looking forward to all that stuff, and we'll see what happens. But I want to see that match. That's what I want to see, the new and the old. HC guys never happy. Yep, pretty much. All right, man, let's start wrapping it up. Let's plug some stuff. This will be the final time I can plug this until next year. Go check out the season finale of the Invincible podcast with me, Rich, Chris, Carlos, and Dana over on the Coalition Entertainment YouTube channel. We had a really good discussion, very long episode, naturally, because we had to cover not only the episode, but also the season as a whole. Really good discussions there. Go check that out. And go check out Invincible. Invincible is fucking awesome, you know? Invincible and the fighting game, too, which I will be able to talk to you more about later. You know, stay tuned. And, Rich, I think that's a good segue for what's coming up on the Coalition this week.
Yes, Tony, that is a phenomenal segue. I also will be talking about this Invincible fighting game soon, so stay tuned. That actually is not the only thing that I will be covering on the Coalition this week. There are a couple other things that I've checked out that I can't talk about yet, but stay tuned if you're a gaming fan. And of course, I can also mention I have been playing Soros. I actually have gotten farther in Soros. Oh, so yeah, I will definitely have some stuff to say about that too soon, so stay tuned.
Okay, that's good to know. I guess I should bring people up to my status. I'm done with Soros. I plead. I'm done. I'm done. I'm like, okay, again, it took me 5 hours just to beat the first boss. I'm like, do I really want to put myself through this? I don't. Nothing but respect for House Mark, but I'm good. You know, I got other games I'd rather be playing, like Invincible, you know, But I can't tell you what I think about it visible yet until the embargo lifts. When does the embargo lift? You shall see. I cannot say that yet. Manny, do you have anything?
Not anything as of now, but there's stuff coming future. Obviously, if you are a Boston Celtics fan, Kari and I have a new have a cheer card that is there if you go to the games. So if you if you're at the games, you get a cool cheer card with a bunch of the players on it. Very, you know, comic booky looking style. Hey. I think it's number seven. I think it's number six or seven of our little series of cards that we had done. It's a really fun project. It's nice to do something a little bit different, and it's not corny looking like some. I would say sometimes when you would see some an attempt to do like comic like basketball players.
Yeah,
you know, we actually made it look like legit looking stuff as opposed to like something we just half-assed or something. So it was a really cool. It was a really fun project. We really sort of had some unfinished business left over from Mosaic, because there's a part in Mosaic where just we did these really cool basketballs. So it was nice to sort of get that out, some cool art. So yeah. If you're at the show at one of the games, the home games, you will get yourself a cool Kari. And
good stuff. Bringing the team back together. You know, that's the dream team right there. You and Kari. By the way, every single time you bring up the, you know, basketball, I think about, you know, the old song, you know, you know, on NBC.
Oh yeah. I thought you were thinking about that, you know, come on and drink. Ride it. You know that song? Come on and drink and juju, right?
Yes.
There you go.
You know, but no, I think about the NBC song, you know, and then of course, you know, what happened, Carlos?
They brought it back.
Oh, they did?
Just a quick little thing. NBC hasn't been playing NBA games for decades, I think it seems. And just this year, they brought it back. And what did they play?
Hell yeah, let's bring it back. Oh, man. What about, what's his face? Bring back Marv Albert, right? You know? Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Yes.
Michael Jordan, yes.
No, because there was always that pause, you know, because he shoots, right? Michael Jordan, yes. I love it, man. I used to watch that shit back in the day, bro, you know?
Oh, yeah.
All right, man, we're done here. So make sure you follow Throwdown on Twitch and Twitter. Subscribe on YouTube. Join the Discord where the conversations and especially the rumors are always flying. Shout out to Mob Hits. You know, I don't know where he gets these sources from, bro. He posts up. I'm like, what? Excuse me?
Yo, man, Mob Hits is an insider.
Although you almost, I know it was Mob Hits. He's the first one that put me onto the whole Tifa rumor. Nobody was talking about it. I was Googling this shit. I couldn't find it. And then a few hours later, all over the internet, Mob Hits. I give him the exclusive, you know? fucking sketch. He goes, Marv Albert got new teeth too, so he could get them bites in better.
Oh, man.
Anyway, go check us out on your favorite podcast app, man. Links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco. And tonight, I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time.
Chris Seeley.
Take care, everyone.
Carlos Romero, a.k.a. Thrag.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch.
Deuces.
Richard Bailey Jr.
Have a good week, everybody.
And Brian Munjoma.
Here's a novel idea for a video game film. You take the video game, and then you do that.
Oh, instead of just ignoring it and doing your own fucking thing, you know, like the Far Cry idiot. Oh, fuck that. I'm going to do my... I never even played the game. Yeah, that's smart.
Yeah. So dumb.
Retarded. You know, or the Mass Effect people. Oh, we're not making this for the gamers. Okay, so I'm not going to watch it. How about that? Motherfuckers. Anyway, we'll see you on... what's up, Brian?
Nothing, because I was saying.
Anyway, we'll see you guys on Thursday. Later.
Peace.
Later.